Welcome, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm Paul Niefer, your host, and today I'm going to welcome Joe Vaklovic as a guest. And Joe, you're based in, I think you're based a little bit north of Nashville, Tennessee. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I moved from Illinois, Chicago area, where I grew up, down to this area about 3.5 years ago now. And we live northeast of Nashville, about 35 miles.
Well, and you know, since I am a CPA, you know, you're going from what I call a very high tax state in Illinois, you know, both income tax and property taxes and so on, to a very conservative tax state in Tennessee. So that's a smart move on your end. So I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, we really like it here. The reason we moved, there were a number of reasons. I mean, part of it had to do with the fact that I just didn't need to be in Chicago anymore. I worked there, you know, at the Board of Trade, around the Board of Trade for, I think, 13 or 14 years. And, you know, as electronic trading became a bigger deal, it's just a lot of people left and there just wasn't the need for me to be there anymore. And there's a lot of things that I like about Tennessee. I like the weather here better. I'm big into outdoor stuff. I fish a lot and this is like paradise for me from that standpoint. I like that I don't have to keep my kids cooped up inside all winter. Not that they were inside all winter in Illinois, but it's just, I like a lot of things about where we live right now.
Well, and you mentioned the Board of Trade, you know, essentially it's all electronic now. I remember getting a tour. Tommy Grassoffi gave me a tour about, oh, I'm going to say 6-7 years ago. And there really went, I think it was after hours because there was nobody there. And I think even if it had been hours, I'm not sure if there would have been hardly anybody there. But it was interesting, at least be on the board. Is there any face-to-face trading going on anymore on any of those boards, or is it all electronic now?
There may still be some stuff in the options pit. I honestly don't know 100%. I haven't called an order down to the floor in a long time. Everything that I need to do, for the most part, and I don't do anything overly complicated, but everything I need to do, I can do on the screen. And that's the way that I've been going for a long time now.
Okay. Well, you briefly touched on your background, but let's fill it in a little bit as far as, again, where you were from, how you got started in this business and where you're at right now.
Well, I can make that a long story, I guess. I'll try to make it a short story. So I'm a city boy. I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I did not come from a farm or from an ag background or anything like that. My family, on my dad's side, had all been city workers. My grandfather, dad's dad, moved here from Czechoslovakia back in, you know, I think it was the 20s. And he had an ag background in the old country and worked at the stockyards in Chicago and got on the Chicago Fire Department. So my whole family on dad's side, they were firefighters. My dad was a cop. And we grew up in a neighborhood where a lot of people's dads were cops or firefighters or whatever. And so that's where I grew up. And I got into ag in college. I went to Illinois in Champaign. Mm-hmm. And I took an ag business class the first year. And I thought it was really interesting. This would have been 2002 or 2003. I thought it was interesting. I stuck with it. It happened to be a good time to get into the ag business. You know, that was right around when ethanol got to be a big deal. You know, farmers started to make money again around that same time that I started working in grain marketing, essentially, and in grain markets. So it just, everything kind of lined up, I guess, in terms of timing and when I got out of school and all that sort of stuff.
And when you said you were in grain marketing, what company did you start with?
So I started working in the Iowa grain office for a company called eHedger. It was the very first place I worked. And then that was real short lived. I worked there for just a few months after college. And then I moved to Mann Financial, which turned into MF Global. Mann Financial is a place that I went. I had an acquaintance from my neighborhood who had worked at Mann, and Mann was the biggest broker on LaSalle Street or anywhere at that time. And I kind of thought to myself at the moment, I didn't like where I was. And I figured, hey, I've got a chance to go work at the biggest brokerage firm that there is and work for a good group. And I did that for about 5 years. And that took me up to the MF Global bankruptcy, basically. And yeah. It was out of the MF Global bankruptcy, which was, it'll be 10 years ago this Halloween, that I was able to go and start my own business and kind of do my own thing. And I've been doing that ever since.
So you've been, and your business name is Standard Grain. Is that correct?
My business name is Standard Grain. And when I first went into business myself, my plan was much different than my vision was much different than where it actually turned out. My vision at the time, and keep in mind, I was 27, 28 when MF Global went bankrupt. I was fairly young, I guess, but I had big aspirations. My idea at the time was to turn this into like this big business, you know, like tons of employees, all that sort of thing. That was my vision at the time. As I did the business more, as I traveled more, as I spoke to customers more, I realized that I had no interest in managing people. I had no interest in running a big business. What I decided that I actually liked doing was working with customers, and that's the part of the job that I like. I don't know that I'd be any good at managing people. Maybe I would be. I don't know. I've never done it. But I like working with customers, and I like doing the business, and I didn't want that to go away. And I talked to a lot of my bigger and longer time customers about this at the time. And a lot of them said to me, Joe, you should just do it the way that you want to do it. Don't do it because you think you'll make more money if you're running people, or because you think you need to be the boss of this big thing. Like, do what you like. So I've been doing what I like, basically. And it's not to say that I like every part of this job. It can be stressful and trying, and there can be issues, but I like doing the business is what I like.
So right now your business would be, let's describe for our listeners out there exactly what type of services you provide to your customers.
Multitude of things, but it's twofold kind of. So I do a newsletter, and with that newsletter, I sell it as a monthly subscription service. And with the newsletter, I put together an email every morning. So I wake up at 4:30, I put together this newsletter, and I include every overnight headline that's out there, you know, charts and weather maps, grain marketing recommendations, all that sort of stuff. And I blast that out to all my customers every day. And then along with that, I send out additional information. Like, I've been doing these videos that I call subscriber only videos. And I talk about everything from USDA reports to grain marketing, to how to capture carry, to any, you know, relevant news topic. So that's part of the business. And then the other part, which is the part that I've been doing longer, is brokerage. And I still handle a lot of brokerage business. I have some customers that have been with me for a long, long time now. And that's what I do kind of during the trading day. But those first, you know, 2-3 hours of the day are spent compiling information, sending out information, keeping customers updated, and then working with those customers or those subscribers on different things. Like, you know, I might get a call about a cash grain contract, or I might get a call about, you know, some sort of issue regarding markets, just a number of things. So I do a lot of consulting also.
Okay. And so, and primarily your customer base is really farmers, isn't it? I mean, would you be doing any work for like commercials or the elevators and so on, or is it primarily just on the farmer side?
I'd say that my average customer is a mid to large size row crop farmer in the Midwest or in the plains. I do have some feedlot business that I handle. But generally, I mean, 9 out of 10 customers are, like I said, mid to large row crop farms in the Midwest, Northern Plains, Southern Plains, out into the far Western Corn Belt, that sort of thing.
Okay. Do you have any customers out here in my neck of the woods? I'm based in Washington State. You know, there's a little bit of corn out here. Of course, most of that just gets, you know, there's some feedlots and some dairies that want the high moisture corn, but we have a fair amount of wheat. Although this year with the drought, our wheat's about 40% lower than normal. So I was just curious if you had anything out here in the Pacific Northwest.
I do. I have several wheat growers in Washington that are newsletter subscribers, and I handle brokerage for a few of them as well. So, I mean, you know, the majority's in the Midwest, but they're all over the place. I mean, I've got customers in Texas. I've got customers in Washington. I've got customers in Pennsylvania, New York, and all over the place. So it's highly variable. But if just to say, you know, the average customers in the Midwest or in the plains.
Yeah, your customer base sounds a little bit like mine. You know, I have tax returns all over the, or farmers all over the country, and I think I spend more time visiting them than my farmer that might be 5 miles down the road. So that just happens once in a while. And of course, out in our area right now, you know, our wheat price is pushing $11 on soft white. And, you know, we have a, you know, our crop insurance price for next year is almost $9. So I think our farmers are almost guaranteed to make money next year, and they're probably going to do fine this year as long as they had crop insurance. So, you know, speaking of farmers, you know, when I talk to farmers, a lot of times one of the complaints that they have about their operation is their lack of marketing skill or their lack of marketing knowledge or the fact that they just don't, in their opinion, they don't market very well. Can you go through what do you view what a typical farmer does wrong when it comes to marketing?
Oh gosh, it's tough to say that there is a typical farmer because just to give you an example of why I say that, you know, I send out a lot of content. I send out all sorts of different ideas and charts and graphs and how to do this, how to do that, and some of my customer base will respond and say, Joe, this is really basic stuff. Why are you covering this? And others will say, oh my gosh, I've never seen this. Thank you so much. So it's really highly variable across the country. You cannot paint every customer into one corner and say, you know, everybody's like this or everybody's like that. I will say this. Grain marketing is extremely difficult. There's nothing easy about this. It's never going to be easy. I've been doing this my entire adult life. So I think this is like my 16th year in the business. Maybe I'm 37. It's never going to be easy. It's never going to get easier. This is something that's going to always constantly present a challenge. And I think that it's that issue partially that is frustrating, is that every year is different. You're never going to nail it every year. Like a guy, you know, a farmer, they look at growing a corn crop or a soybean crop and they can have a really good year where they just nail it. When it comes to marketing, very rarely are you ever going to do that. You know, it's always kind of a matter of just how good or how bad did you do in a certain year. You're never going to sell everything at the high. I think it's for that reason. It's just the inability to perfect it is seen as being a problem and kind of frustrating to some people.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I actually have some farm ground that I've picked up in this year and last year. And I'm going to tell you, I lucked into, and again, I'm not really farming it. I'm the landlord, but I'm a 50-50 crop share, or two thirds, one third. And on some of my corn, or about half of my corn, I marketed it at 631, and I just lucked into it. It wasn't because of any great knowledge on my end. They quoted 631 and I said, okay, sold. So I was pretty happy at that price. So we'll see what the remaining 50% gets sold at. So right now we're going to actually take a quick break for a sponsor message. So as soon as the message is done, we'll come back and continue the interview.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast. This is Paul Niefer, and we're joined again by Joe Vaklevic. And Joe, is there something that farmers do very well at when it comes to marketing?
Some farmers, yeah. I think that what I've seen, especially in recent years, and among younger farmers in particular, maybe those, say, 40 and under, I've seen a lot of people focusing a lot more on budgets, budgeting, being aware of their numbers and their financial situation. Whereas if I go back 10 years, I'm going to say that knowledge wasn't as widespread. I've got so many customers now that'll send me spreadsheets and send me different documentation regarding their marketing. And that's really the first step in the whole thing, is being aware of your financial situation. Corn at $5 is just an arbitrary number. What really matters is corn at $5 versus your cost to produce it. So the farmers are starting to get a lot better, in my opinion, over these last 10 years or so at knowing those numbers and how it works. Because again, the prices on the board, the cash bids that you see, they're all just arbitrary. What really matters is the comparison between those numbers and what it costs you to produce it. And I'm seeing farmers really, really up their game in that respect.
And I agree with that, and certainly, Chris Barron out in Iowa, matter of fact, I will see him later this week. There's a chance I get to harvest my soybeans out there. I'm not sure if that'll happen, but there's a good chance this Friday that might happen. And because of his, his consulting services that he does, he's helped a lot of farmers understand what is their true cost of production. And like I say, if you know what that cost is, at least in my opinion, it's a whole lot easier for that farmer to market that that crop when they know, hey, my cost is, let's say $3.78 and the price right now is $4.22. I can lock in a decent margin and they go ahead and do it.
That's why grain marketing, I put out recommendations to all my customers, but when it really comes down to it, you've got to do your thinking for yourself. First off, because of what you just mentioned, I mean, everybody's, numbers are slightly different. Another thing that I think is a big issue would be the financial standing of a given farmer or operation. Meaning, are you a farmer who's cash rich, no debt? Are you a farmer who's cash poor, tons of debt, tons of leverage? I think that those factors should be considered when you're making marketing decisions. If you're somebody who's farming on you got a ton of debt, you're highly leveraged, you may have to be a little bit more aggressive with, say, forward sales when you're looking at profitable levels. Whereas the guy who's got everything paid for or has very little debt can be a little bit more lax in his marketing early on. Maybe doesn't need to make those forward sales. There's a lot of things that that separate one operation from another, and no two are the same.
Now, when I've discussed marketing with various companies or various people out there, some are more technically orientated, some are more fundamentally orientated, some are a combination of both. Where would you come in on that realm?
The first thing that I consider always is what I just discussed is cost of production. If I'm going to advise a sale, I'm doing it mainly because, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but mainly my goal is to make sure that people make money and don't lose money, right? That's goal number one. I don't ever want my opinion to be somebody's marketing plan. So I want to try to take things that I consider to be factual or tangible and use them to make marketing decisions. Seasonal patterns are a good example of that. These markets tend to follow seasonal patterns, not every year, but in a lot of years they do. And I take that into consideration. Like, I know that 7 or 8 out of 10 years, selling corn in May or June or the first part of July is better than selling it at harvest. So in a lot of situations, I'll advise the customers make forward sales at that time if the prices look good. That's one thing. Another factor I consider is the position of large money managers. Historically, in the modern era of record keeping, when it comes to the funds, as we refer to them, it's usually not a good time to make sales when the funds are short or real heavily short. That's another thing that I consider. I do consider the charts. I'm not a big chart guy. I don't follow, what do they call them? I don't even know, cycles. I'm not a big cycle guy or a wave guy or anything like that. I'm not really big into that. But the seasonal stuff, the CFTC data, cost of production, things along those lines are all things that I like to use.
Okay, good. And I think I'm similar to that as far, and again, I'm not an expert in that area, but I think it's important to understand that, especially the dynamics, like you say, if the funds are heavily long, that may be, the time to sell. Funds are heavily short, that might be the time not to sell, so those are just some common sense type things. So now, going into the future, if you look out a year from now, 2 years from now, is there anything that you would suggest to a farmer that they might want to be looking at as far as, is this a good time maybe to do some forward sales into 2022, 2023, and so on? Or are we in more of a wait and see type pattern?
I have advised 2022 sales for both corn and soybeans, and I'm absolutely terrified of what could happen potentially. My job right now for the moment when it comes to 2022 is to identify risk. I have no idea what's going to happen next year. I don't know if we're going to have a big crop, a small crop. I don't know if the stock market's going to collapse. I don't know if the Fed's going to raise rates. I don't know anything about it. All I know for a fact right now when it comes to 2022 is basically two things. I know the cost of production in regard to row crops and just about every crop is up sharply. Inputs are going to be up sharply. It's going to cost the farmer a lot more to grow corn and soybeans next year. The second thing that I know is the board price. And I know that the board price allows the farmer to make money next year at this point in time, in the vast majority of situations. Every spreadsheet I've seen so far, and granted they're incomplete, but every spreadsheet I've seen allows the farmer to make money with these 22 corn at, you know, $5 or better, no 22 beans in the $12.50, $13 neighborhood. So I, as a risk manager, knowing that I don't know anything about which direction the markets are going to go, I'm concerned that, hey, wait a minute, if they take 50, 60 cents off corn, they take, you know, take a little bit more than that in beans, certainly, but you could all of a sudden be in a really bad spot. Corn could be at 4.25 and a guy may not be able to make money next year. So yes, I am greatly concerned about 2022. I have advised some sales, and I think I explained why for the most part. Yeah.
No, you definitely did. And I, you know, matter of fact, I know that I've sold some of my potential crop for 2022 already, and I need to sell more. I know that. So, and of course, partly, you know, our winter wheat guys, they've already locked in. They know what their crop insurance is. But for the 2022 crop, we have no idea what the crop insurance price is yet, because that's still, what, about 5 months away, 6 months away before that discovery is going to be known. And it could be, like you say, it could be a buck lower or 50 cents lower on corn and a couple bucks lower on beans. So there's definitely a lot more risk there than certainly with my winter wheat crop out in our area. So
yeah, there is. And just keep in mind, when I speak, I'm speaking through the microphone, I guess, of somebody who is really conservative when it comes to this stuff. I mean, I tend to be extra or maybe even overly cautious when it comes to risk in some situations, which has in some years led me to early sales that end up looking bad. Last year was certainly an example of that. And I try to be as transparent and honest with customers about what I've done and what I will do as I possibly can. And yeah, somebody like me, when you get into a bull market year like last year, where you have this big contra-seasonal rally, I'm absolutely going to have early and bad looking sales on the books. But there's going to be a lot of other years, like, you know, what we've seen these last 4 or 5 years, where the early, what I call risk management sales, really pay off. And yeah, I try to be as upfront with people about that as I can, is that I'm here to manage risk. I'm not here necessarily to predict what prices are going to do.
Well, and I think, you know, we have to realize that you hedge your risk, you speculate on price, and the farmer really shouldn't be in the business of speculating. They really need to be in the business of running their farm, hedging that risk, and so on. I mean, I've had multiple phone calls from my farmers back in 2012. Hey, you know, I'm going to wait until corn is, you know, local price is $9 a bushel. Well, it hit $8.67. They didn't sell, and their final sale was like at $5.50 or something. I mean, it just happens way too many times where they want to speculate on getting the highest price, and they end up with the bottom third. So that's where we don't want our farmers to be at.
I think I did a podcast maybe last year, and it was called Don't Be a Trader. And I encouraged farmers and people who market grain essentially to not try to speculate in these markets, because the people who do speculate in these markets are enormous wealth and money managers who have untold fortunes. They've spent millions and millions of dollars on algorithms and computer systems and technology, and that's who you're competing against. And I don't think that as a speculator, you want to be competing against those people. You've got to do what you can to take your edge, which is, you know, your crop, your ability to grow a crop, your profitability when it's there, and use it. But you don't want to be in competition with these people. You want to take that, aspect of it away as quickly as you can.
Is there a certain tool that you typically recommend over other tools? You know, some advisors only want to use options. Others only want to use futures. Others want to just forward contract and so on. What is sort of the sweet spot that you typically see? And that's probably not an appropriate question because, like you say, it just depends on the situation. But what are you typically advising your farmers when they do come to hedging?
Cash sales. Cash sales will be what you use to pay back your operating note. Options are a supplement to that. Futures are for those customers who have used futures, are comfortable using futures, are comfortable handling margin calls. They've got the money to do it. But cash sales are what pay the bills. And that's what I focus on for the most part. And there are other advisors that will tell you different. They use options very heavily. You'll be trading options every week or every day. I don't do that. I think I've made like 3 official option recommendations this year. And that's probably like pretty close to what I typically do. I don't think you guys need to be trading the markets. I think you need to be managing risk, and they're 2 different things.
Yeah. Totally agree. Is there, we're getting close to the end of the conversation. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to the conversation?
Grand scheme of things here. I mean, so we're sitting here, it's mid-September 2021. Nearby December corn is $5.13 as I look at my screen. November beans are $12.85. You know, we've come off the highs here, and that in a lot of situations will be discouraging to a farmer. They won't want to make sales. But when you step back and look at the prices and the time of year, we are at harvest. Corn's above 5. Beans are just south of 13. These are really phenomenal prices. 2021 is a great opportunity for a farmer to make money. And that's not me advising a sale right this very moment or anything, but just, you know, grand scheme of things, even though we've come off the highs here short term, these are still really good markets. I'm hoping this continues into 2022, but I'm not willing to go into 2022 with 100% complete optimism, because I'm aware of the risks out there, I guess. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that 21, 22 are 2 totally different years. 21, it's going to be hard to mess up at this point. 22 is could be pretty easy to mess up, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. You're sort of cautiously optimistic, but emphasize the word cautious.
Yep, cautious. Oh, I'm always cautious and probably overly cautious to a fault at some point, but at some times. But I guess that if that's my fault, I'm okay with that.
Yep, no, totally agree. Well, again, Joe, thanks a lot for being on this podcast today. It was a very informative, as far as, like you say, farmers need to really focus more in on being a hedger, not a speculator. I think you totally agree with that.
Yep, I would definitely agree with that. And thank you again for having me on, if I didn't say that already.
Nope, perfect. And again, this is the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. And this is Paul Niefer, your host, signing off.